It was.
Yeah, it's
he's
a
con.
Box.
Oh, okay.
So I'll do.
Can you write down the dates that you give?
Yeah.
Like if
they're all today. Please mute. We have a lot of background noise.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Good morning, everyone. We're a little impromptu here this morning. If you're not muted, we were in our meeting setup, we didn't have you automatically muted. Do you mind just awesome. Muting yourself if you are not, so we don't end up with a bunch of background noise?
I'm so sorry, Suzanne. It's on my task claims.
I'll try to figure out who's talking. There's somebody having a personal conversation. Let's see.
I think it looks like Belinda's on the phone, maybe. I don't know if there's some others that are, just so we don't end up.
There we go. I muted Belinda. Okay.
Okay, great. Okay, so I'm gonna say it one more time just because we picked up a couple new people. Our meeting settings are a little bit unusual today, so not everyone is muted. So please mute yourselves if you have not already, just so that we don't end up with background noise or inadvertent information from you that you might not really intend to share with the group. So, okay, I think, we're probably good to go. So we're gonna try to get things started here quickly and bring you up to speed on a couple of items really quickly. So this is a surprise DAM meeting. It's everyone is surprised that there's another DAM meeting in 2020. But two things have happened since we saw you last. One of them I think that you will think is a good, hopefully, holiday surprise. And another is probably one that you'll hope that there's a receipt taped to it so you could return it to where it came from. But unfortunately, it's not returnable. So what we're going to do is start with the good stuff first. And I just want to say to you that the first thing that we're going to talk about here regarding the pay code situation is really the result of feedback you all provided at the last meeting. So our formatting and just the encouragement to make this a dialogue and to hear what you're facing and the things that you're contemplating, sometimes that helps us to have our own little light bulb moments. And that was certainly the case here. So we appreciate the feedback and that's definitely sort of where this comes from. I would also just like to say before we get started, a big welcome back to Courtney. We've missed her while she's been out and it's really nice to have her back, especially during these most crazy times as we push through the rest of 2020 and recertification and all these new rules. So what I'm gonna do to start is turn it over to sort of, Ken, do you wanna talk through the pay change piece of it?
I can, yes.
That would be great. So, and I don't know if we have, are we gonna screen share or we're gonna just explain it?
I don't have a copy in front of me.
Okay, oh here, Tracy's pulling it up. Thanks, Tracy. Okay, hit it, Ken.
Okay. So like Catherine mentioned, we had these light bulb moments after our last Zoom meeting. And some of the things, these are gifts to you. I hope you accept them as gifts. The first bullet is paths for the leaves that are simply being closed and reopened on 1/1/21 for FMLA/CFRA recertification purposes will not be required. So you may have leaves where you are closing them as a result. They were intermittent leaves in 2020. And in 2020, you are continuing to put them on intermittent leaves, but we have to reset the clock. So you have to close them in VCHRP and then reopen them. In the cases like that, you are not required to complete an RFL and a new path, putting them back on an intermittent leave. That would apply to both, for instance, leaves for care of oneself and also leaves for care of family members for intermittent basis. So that's pretty cut and dry. The second bullet, which I'm really excited about, is the department reps will be able to key their own extensions in BCHRP using a new action reason that we created. It's called EXT/EXT. So those are the letters you'll put on the path. But when you actually go into VCHRP and you go into job data, you're going to hit the plus sign, and then you're going to put in an effective date. The effective date will be the date that the extension takes place. So if you had an extension that expired on November 30th and the employee was due back on November 30th, then you'll hit 11:30 as the effective date, because that was the day they were due back. And that's the first day of the extension. Then you'll do the drop-down menu, and it will read as extension of leave under the action. And then when you drop down to the second drop-down menu, it will show the reason, and you'll put in extension of leave. Then you'll drop down to the bottom for the expected return date. You'll delete the date if there's a date in there, and you'll put in the new date that you're extending it to. And then you'll click save. And now what you've done is you have extended your leave in VCHRP. So there'll be no need for you to send us the paths for our entry. We were doing those in the past, but because of unprecedented events, it makes more sense that you can enter them on your own. Now, what you'll see when you go into LOA tracking, excuse me, you will see a row every time you extend a leave, or every time you put in a leave and you start it as a paid leave, you'll see a row. Every time you change it from paid to unpaid, you'll see another row. Every time you do an extension, you'll see another row. So many employees, especially this time of year or this year, have had multiple extensions. So you will see all of those rows be added to LOA tracking. So you can be able to see the history, and we'll be able to see the history as well. And then last but not least, and we all know this, but we have to throw it in because sometimes we forget, please follow green and red light entry deadlines and take those into consideration. Sometimes when there's holidays, we have to do entry a little bit earlier. So those could affect the typical standard green and red light entry deadlines. So I hope everyone is excited as we are to offer you these gifts and give you a little bit more control and, be able to make these entries on your own and not have to wait for us. Does anyone have any questions regarding this? I think it's pretty straightforward, but if not, I can take some questions. Okay, I have a question to repeat the first gift. The paths for the leaves that are simply being closed and reopened for January 1, 2021, for the recertification process, paths will not be required. So you will have instances, most commonly intermittent leaves, where you're going to be closing them in VCHRP and you're going to be reopening them to reset the clock. So you will need to, you will not need to submit a path for the RFL or to enter the new leave effective 1/1/21. No paths are required. I got a question about extending the paths. Let me check here, one moment.
You've gotten one woohoo, no paths. So that seems like the first gift has at least been seen as a positive. So,
right. We do want to require the extension paths at this time, because we need to have those for our files. That was a question that came out. So. Extension paths will still be required only in the case when you open and close a leave because of the recertification process. No paths are required. We have another question. Do we begin entering extension on 1-1 or now? Let me check my payroll calendar to see when 1-1 occurs. Because we don't future date, you'll need to enter them on 1-2 unless you're working on January 1st. When can we start closing our own, doing our own extensions, excuse me. That is available now. You can start doing that now. I checked it last night and I was able to enter an extension. So of course, green light, red light, don't forget that. But yes, you can enter those now.
And just a reminder, the way that today's meeting is set up, not everyone is muted. So if you're not muted or you don't want to potentially share something unintended, we would encourage you to mute. Are there other questions specific to Ken's gifting, holiday gifting?
Remember, there's no refunds either.
Exactly. Okay. All right. So obviously, if things arise as you move forward and you have additional questions, we're happy to talk those through with you. But, you know, short term, we're hoping this is another time saver, and certainly paired with the information we shared last week that Jess provided in terms of sort of some ways to organize your workflow with recertification. We're very hopeful this is going to make the work process a lot easier for everybody. Looks like maybe we got one more, Ken.
Okay, let me check.
I think it's, where in VCHRP do we enter the action reason?
Okay, so it would be similar to when you enter a paid leave of absence. You're going to hit the plus sign, you're going to put in an effective date, and then you're going to go onto the right side near the plus sign. There's a action and reason drop-down menus, and you'll look for the one that says extension of leave for the action. Then you'll go to the reason drop-down menu and enter extension of leave there as well.
Okay, so I'll give it another just couple seconds to see if anybody has any other questions about this change that hopefully is a positive one for all of you.
I wanted to expand on the question, do we begin entering extensions on 1-1 or now? They can enter them now, you know, they don't have to wait till 1-1. So if you have an extension like today that you need to enter, go ahead and do it yourself now. It's in the system ready for you to use.
Right, I'm sorry, they can enter the extension now. I was more referencing the new leave should be entered into the new year, since we don't post date.
Yes, yes, but extensions, if they're effective now, go ahead and do them.
There's a request to get a copy of PowerPoint copies. And we can post that on our website along with the recording for anyone that may have missed today's meeting.
Yes. So it'll all be on the usual intranet site. And in this particular section, this one, because it's not COVID specific, we will put this under the DAM portion of the meeting's materials.
There's another question. How do I get to the tab? How do I get to that tab?
Extension tab.
It's in the job data page. On that page, if you go down to the bottom, you'll see the expected return to work date. That's the date that you'll be updating. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question or not. There is no separate extension tab per se, except the job data page.
And Ken, just for clarification, this is for only for people who currently enter their own transactions, right? I wonder if this is a department who's centralized, who doesn't enter their own stuff?
We don't enter extensions.
Which agency are you?
Oh, can they hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Natalie's in fire.
Fire. Will you, do you enter, do you have any entry rights into VCHRP at all?
Yes, we do the regular PAFs and the RFLs, but not the extensions, right, Belinda?
Correct.
Well, this is the gift that we're giving you. It's, you'll be able to do the extensions now.
Got that, Belinda?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome, Belinda.
We're gonna extend everybody at FIRE for the new year, give them another gift.
Nice. Okay, can we enter extensions anticipated until the end of the year now? I don't see why not. I mean, if you're approving it to the end of the year, you can do that. Yay. Is there any other questions that we can answer?
Okay, it looks like maybe we've answered the questions on this particular part. So again, if real world application puts you in a place where suddenly when you start really working on your cases, you have questions, we're obviously available for answers. We will post the reference materials so that you have them. But I think this gives you now the tool to be able to do some of this without having to generate the PAF, which will take that one step out and hopefully make this recertification a little bit quicker and easier, as you'll be able to do this and just process them and move along. So hopefully everyone sees it as a positive, and it's an opportunity for you to be able to more easily and efficiently move the ones forward that you now have in your recertification process. So the next gift that we're going to talk about is the one that I'm confident you're all going to want to return, but unfortunately, we can't do that for you. So when we met last, which I know feels like a long time ago, but it was last week, what has changed? Well, our friends at Cal OSHA went ahead last week and voted on some emergency regulations that relate specifically to COVID, and went ahead and not only voted on those, but decided to make many of them effective immediately, as in last week. And so we did talk about this a little bit at our last meeting, that our January 1 meeting is going to focus on Assembly Bill 685, which has some of these regulations. We also wanted you to know that in addition, there's parts of it that you're already going to have to put into practice. So we are fortunate to have received a memo that went out yesterday that probably a lot of you on this call did receive, that Chuck Pode put together with just some generalized requirements, and then attached what Tracy's showing right now is a CalPELRA alert that really goes into detail about how this particular regulation works. It's complicated, it's multi-layered, there's lots of different things that associate with it. We're going to be having a meeting on Thursday through risk management. Our safety folks are going to be having a meeting inviting within your agencies. Any of your individuals who do safety loss control will be invited to that, because they are going to have a piece of this, but it's also going to have an impact on leave components. So I think the important part is we're trying to roll this out, again, understanding that it only became effective last week. So we're sorting through all of it, and it has lots of different implications. But the yes, Phil has rightly said that this is the Grinch who's arrived for the holidays, is the new Cal OSHA regulations. So what I want to make sure that you understand, and we will post again this information, this will be posted on the intranet specific to under our disability accommodation meetings. It will be on the COVID specific parts. So what is really important though about this regulation is if you have someone who is positive for COVID and we're working through this, certainly you're going to want to reach out to risk management, have some discussions with us about what are the various things you need to do over the next week or two as we're really putting the formal procedures in place. But the one important part that I think everyone needs to be thinking about from a leave perspective is the requirements. If we have someone who is positive or people who've had what they're defining as a close contact, they're required to leave the work site and quarantine for specified periods of time. We want to use the same methodology that we would traditionally use and have been using up to this point. If someone is positive, we want to let them telework if they can. So if your agency has telework, that's the number one go-to, because the employee's at home, they're working, they're getting their pay, and you know, for the brief period of time they're not allowed to be at the work site, everybody's still kind of getting value out of the process. However, if you have somebody who genuinely cannot telework, it's teleworking is just not possible for their position, the regulations then say the next go-to is that if they have sick bank time, so specifically sick bank time, so that's going to only, you know, deal with some of your labor groups, but if they have sick bank time, they are going to need to use their sick bank time. If they then do not have a sick bank and or have no time in that bank, at that point then, they will go to regular pay. And Tracy, do you want to share with them what the code would be for the regular pay component?
Auditor controller hasn't released that yet.
Oh, they haven't. Okay.
No. As soon as we have it, we'll share it. And it's not regular pay, because if they're not working, reg pay is working. So if they're not working, it's not going to be a reg pay. It's going to be some type of pay for being off.
Right.
It may be leave with pay, but I'm not certain.
Yeah. Right.
So it will be leave. Sorry. And that was my, so sorry for I'm entered. So they will receive what is their regular amount of pay. Let's say that. So, so as Tracy indicated that she's been, keeping auditor controller's office busy with all of her unique pay code requests here as things have popped up, but it does mean that there will be a code specific to this Cal OSHA regulation, if we have to put them into quarantine, that we're going to be releasing, and we're going to need to use that to track that pay specific to these regulations. And I think there's a lot of questions or a few questions here. So it looks like our, maybe the first one is, what about SDI and PFL? So again, these new Cal OSHA regulations, which took effect last week, sort of, again, we're back to all these different layers. Keeping in mind that the things associated with the federal act are set to expire on December 31st. So yes, if people have those entitlements, we're gonna have them using those entitlements. So if they can't telework, you're going to have them use their attestation if they still have it, and their, you know, emergency paid sick leave if they still have it. Again, you know, those things are set to the attestation goes till the end of the public health order, but the EPSL is set to expire December 31st. We don't know if that's going to happen or not happen, but that's where we are right now. So sort of the workflow as it is will be that you will first look for telework as your number one, then you'll look at these entitlements that are available, attestation and the EPSL through the end of the year. If those things have already been used and expired, then we have to go to individuals who have sick leave. If they have it, we would use that. And then we would go to the pay code. Once it's released, we'll be providing that information.
Catherine, can you hear me? Sorry, I just want to ask. So if employees don't want to use up their sick time, would we still want to be offering them the SDI if they wanted to apply for it so that they didn't have to use all the, I'm just trying to think of scenarios of employees who may want to not use up their sick leave before they start getting paid the regular pay.
So the regulations as they're written say that sick leave is what is to be used when sick leave is available. So it's not an optional. It's a, this is the methodology that we're using. This will
not
be
offering. Flow. So we should not offer SDI or PFL.
The regulations say when sick time is available, that is what's to be used after the other entitlements that we talked about. You know, if you can't telework and you use the other stuff, the next thing to be used is sick time.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The interviews for deputy director are off at this point, correct?
So let's see. Per your last statement, is that correct that labor groups like management classified who have no sick pay accruals would be paid using this other pay code should they fit all the other criteria of no telework and exhausting other entitlements? That is correct. So then the next question is, this is for someone who is positive or close contact with someone COVID positive. And that is also correct. And I think, again, we're going to talk about this in more detail starting in January, and hopefully between now and then, you don't find yourselves with many positives. But we just would encourage you, again, if you have a positive, before you go and run out and say to everyone, you're a close contact, the definitions are very specific. And we would want you, again, to reach back to your safety person within your agency if they need support, through Tony Dominguez and Jennifer Peters in risk management, risk management, is that we want to be really careful that you're not identifying people incorrectly as a close contact and forcing them off of the work site, because it has all kinds of implications. So in the course of the next week or two, again, I know these are lots of new regulations, things changing literally, you know, at the drop of a hat. Call us, ask us, go through the process with us before you make these decisions so that we are not sending people home who shouldn't be home and impacting operations where we should not be impacted. So that's really, I think there's more to come on each of these pieces. And I know it's complicated, and I know it's in many ways really burdensome. And unfortunately, as I said, it's the gift that we're stuck with here that we can't return. But we want you to know we're here to support it, and we are still sort of working our way through the regulations. As we get more information and clarification on some of the pieces, we will be continuing to reach back out to you. Next question is, will these be retroactive to November 30th or as of 1/1? So the regulations are effective as of November 30th. So if you have people who are positive November 30th forward, these regulations apply. What will salary employees use if they cannot telework? So again, salary employees, if they can't telework, we're gonna look at the, do they have attestation available? Do they have EPSL available? We're gonna offer those things as we would, just like we do now. If all of those things then have been exhausted or used, then we're going to use the pay code that once the auditor controller gives that information to Tracy, we'll be providing you with that code, and that's the code you will use. Is leave of absence paperwork required and a PAF generated?
Yes, all leave of absence paperwork and PAF are required. The standard rules for leave of absence still apply.
Is there any change to staff who are symptomatic and required to isolate and seek testing, but eventually test negative? I didn't see any in the language, but wanted to confirm. Chuck, do you want to give this gift?
No.
I figure why not share the fun?
All right, let me look at this again. The code is pretty darn specific that negative tests cannot be used to clear somebody to return to work, which is a bit interesting because since these regulations came out and effective on November 30th, within 2 days, the CDC started changing some of its criteria. And while we were on this meeting, Dr. Levin was discussing that. So I don't know what's going to happen in the future. But as of right now, a negative test does not clear an employee to come back to work.
Thank you. So I just want to say back to Phil, there's multiple Grinches. So, again, obviously, you know, these are parts of the regulations that I will say, you know, for those of us who read them, there's a part of this that doesn't always rationally make sense, and that why is it that a negative test at a certain point doesn't release someone, and you know, one set of guidelines don't match another. We understand that that part's incredibly frustrating and all of this can be very confusing, but you know, the bottom line is these are the regulations, we're bound by them, and it is what it is. So unfortunately at the moment that doesn't take us out of it. Phil is giving you a pass though, Chuck, because you got the Santa beard, which I think is nice. Very generous, Phil. So let's see here. So is there no flexibility with the definition of close contact? So in an abundance of caution, if telework is available, wouldn't we just ask people to telework that may have had close or direct contact with someone that's positive and stay out for the incubation period at least? This is a good question in that, so within these regulations, things are very specifically defined. Close contact is gonna be less than 6 feet for a cumulative time of 15 minutes within a 24 hour period. 15 minutes does not have to be in a row, it's total. So 3 minutes here, 3 minutes there, and you know, now you've gotten to 15 minutes. What's I think really important about this, and I just want to continue to have you message and share it, is that as we get into these regulations and they continue to grow and become more complicated, if you have operations where individuals can telework, I think that these regulations continue to support that the fewer people we have at a work site where we don't need them, you're avoiding some of these other implications. So I do think the most important message you can take back from today is, you know, yay, we've received the gift of new Cal OSHA emergency regulations and we can't return them. So what are we gonna do within our department? And that yes, there's still a lot to explore here and to kind of nail down some of the particulars, but the fewer people we have at a site where we're able to minimize those individuals, the less of an impact this is going to be. So you want to be very careful in using the very specific close contact definition for those you require to leave the work site, but certainly using your teleworking as a you know, where you can and as a form of sort of thinning things out is always going to be, I think, to the benefit of the department as it relates to these particular regulation impacts. So I think there's a big difference between, you know, the regulations, to be clear, are require people to leave the work site. How that's going to be processed and what you're going to do with those folks is different than saying, you don't meet that definition, but you're able to telework. If you'd like to, you can. That's a different conversation than these are specific regulations that say if a person falls within it, these are the things we must do, we have to do them. Is it safe to say we still need a medical or doctor's notes to place employees off work and clear notes to return employees for all formal leaves? Will public health notices or positive test results be good enough to be to place employees off of work? So again, good questions. So again, to Ken's point, our leave processes are going to basically be the same. However, in these regulations, so we do need, you know, we're going to want the positive in order to say, hey, you have to leave the work site. But the regulations do not require a negative for them to return. So we can't require somebody to go back and test for the negative. But we are still using, as it stands right now, our usual methodology for, you know, sometimes we need clearance and they haven't seen anyone and we've been using employee health, those types of things to be sure that there's nothing still happening from a symptom standpoint or other standpoint that allows them to clear back. As it stands right now, that same method that you've been using all along is going to continue to be the method. If those things change, we'll certainly let you know, but currently we're going to continue to follow that same methodology for clearance back. What do we use to clear an employee who tests negative? So that's where, and I don't want to get too far afield here on this, but just short term, again, I think in the next two-ish weeks, if you find yourself in this situation, you're going to want to reach out. There's lots of different nuances we need to talk you through. But the Cal/OSHA regulations don't have negative testing is not a, that has nothing to do with your ability to return to work. If you have had a close contact with someone who's positive, you are required to leave the work site and quarantine. Whether you are asymptomatic, whether you have a negative test every single day that you're away from work, Cal/OSHA says you're not welcome back to the work site until that quarantine period has ended. Are we still requiring the employee to quarantine 14 days instead of the new recommendation from the CDC of 10 days? So all excellent questions. Unfortunately, we're back to, and I think it's important that you all, to, if you haven't seen these new sort of the overview of these regulations, that you take a print them up off the intranet site today and take a look at them. Unfortunately, Cal/OSHA put regulations that are emergency regulations into effect last week at the same exact time that CDC changed the quarantine timeframe. We are bound by what Cal/OSHA is requiring as it relates to these regulations. We in our generally our concern with all this is that it takes Cal/OSHA a long time to put their stuff together. And the likelihood that they're going to adopt stuff now to realign with CDC is very unlikely. So we need to follow the Cal/OSHA regulations for individuals who have a close contact with someone who is positive at the work site. So if that is your fact pattern, you need to follow the regulations for Cal/OSHA. And again, we're going to try to give you an easier way of this as we go forward. But, you know, short term, we just want to make you aware of it, and then we'll talk about it. I don't know if anyone's with Gloria. I think she's unmuted. But now she's muted. okay, let's see here. Does the close contact also include wearing a mask? Does it matter if the employee is wearing a mask or not? I feel like I should let Chuck answer more of these. do you want to give more good news to the group?
I actually tried to help you out, so I did answer it. And yeah, the OSHA regulations are very specific that it doesn't matter whether the person was wearing a mask or not. And so it really underscores the importance of social distancing. If our people keep 6 feet or more away from one another, however it is you accomplish that, you will not run into the issue of having to send other employees home.
So, and so then the last one is EHS up to date on the Cal OSHA regulation? So, you know, everybody is certainly trying to do their part to keep everyone else sort of up to speed on all of these different things. As I said, you know, obviously this Cal OSHA thing just dropped into our laps last week that, hey, it's effective immediately piece of it. So yeah, we're certainly trying to work together very closely with all the groups, but you know, much like ourselves, it's hard. We're all working hard to try to keep this all straight. If you have questions or concerns specific to those pieces, certainly when you send someone, feel free to make sure that we're all speaking the same language and having the same conversation. Is this somebody who had a close contact with a positive at the work site? That's going to be a potentially different question than I had an employee who went to a family function and everybody at the family party ended up getting COVID, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the work site, and they haven't been to the work site since they were positive. That has different implications, and we're going to have to be really fact specific and detailed when we're looking at what our options are with each of these cases.
Catherine?
Yes.
I have a private question. So for law enforcement who exhausts ND hours, EPSL, and they're still off work, if they submitted a workers' comp claim, will those get 4850 pay or reg salary?
That seems like such an easy question. No. could they try to make it harder? So no, that's a totally fair question. So let me just start by saying on these regulations, which I think those of you who are impacted already know, if you are safety, meaning law enforcement, fire, you know, all of our groups there that fall into those categories, or your healthcare, you're doing patient care, healthcare workers, these regulations, the Cal OSHA regulations, do not apply. It's going to be your other individuals that this is going to apply to. So so in relationship to the inquiry there, just want to start by answering that question to say safety members do not are excluded under this Cal OSHA emergency regulation as it relates to this quarantine piece. If a person though were to be positive and they file a work comp claim and they exhaust attestation and emergency paid sick leave, yes, then 4850 would kick in if they were out for more than 14 days and it was deemed to be work-related. So hopefully that answers their question in general terms. Somebody said, are we meeting again on Thursday for more information? Not sure if I heard that or if this is wishful thinking. So there is going to be a meeting on Thursday morning with our safety folks in risk management. They have reached out to those who are the safety members within the given agencies. So if you are interested in participating and you're not sure, you know, if you've had somebody in your agency who's been contacted, you can certainly send in an email if you'd like to Tony Dominguez in risk management and ask that you be included on the invite for Thursday morning. That discussion is going to be very geared towards these regulations require us to have safety plans and other plans that are not necessarily associated with the leave implications and those things. As far as the leave part goes, it's our intention. Our next DAM meeting is the first week of January, and it's our intention to talk about these regulations along with Assembly Bill 685, which goes into effect on January 1st, and sort of give you some guides and guidelines for being able to manage all those things once we get to all pieces being effective as of January.
Let me jump in for just a moment. I did get an email this morning from Tony Dominguez, and there are some departments that did not get an invite to Thursday's meeting that didn't, I'm not quite sure the criterion. I think some of them didn't have a designated safety coordinator. And I did see that agriculture department was one of those that had not been invited. So I would certainly encourage you to, from Ag Department, email Tony Dominguez. I will email him as well and let us know who should be invited to that meeting so that we can make sure that there's a representative there. Same holds true for any other agency. If you've not been invited and you would like to attend, please email Tony or you can email Jennifer Peters. Or if your safety coordinate, if you go back and check and the person that is the safety coordinator has not been invited and would like to attend, please do so. It was Tony's intent to reach out to those agencies that had not been invited individually. However, he is working furiously right now to put together some of the written documents that are required in the Cal OSHA regulations. And for those of you that cannot sleep at night and love to read to go to sleep, you can email me and I'd be happy to send you the Cal OSHA regulations that have been keeping me up at night over the last week or so.
Thanks, Chuck. So yeah, so I do think as you know, I'm with Gia and the eye scratching out seems preferable. So you know, we just never know what's going to come from day to day, week to week as we go through COVID. I know it's it can be frustrating and it can feel overwhelming. We're trying really hard to just give you as much as we can to support and until we can get to the next part. So my counsel at this particular moment is, and I hope it turns out to not be the case, but we're to December 8th today. I hope that, you know, you don't have any positives between now and our next DAM meeting. If you do, it's so much to digest and we're still, as Chuck noted, there's parts of it we ourselves have been trying to seek legal counsel and put together protocols and still work through all this stuff that just happened just a couple days ago. Just reach out to us. We are your resource. We're going to hold your hand through it and we're going to figure it out together. We'll go one case at a time until we get where we need to be, where we have an ability to say, okay, here's the master plan. And now you can follow the master plan. And we'll have that stuff available for you for our January meeting. So I know, again, it feels overwhelming. It feels like a lot. We're with you. We understand that. But we're here to support. So we continue to hope you're not going to need it. Hopefully none of our folks end up with COVID, but you know, that's sort of where we are here is it's just where we have to be flexible and deal with what's in front of us. Phil was asking, could he unmute to ask a question? You should be allowed to unmute, Phil.
Perfect. Can you hear me? All right.
Yep.
So one of the big areas that I didn't specifically see was the most common that we encounter. So someone has cough, cold, something that falls within symptoms that we would preclude them from entering the workplace. We send them home and ask them to seek testing. I didn't see any language. All the language I saw in here was specific to those who then had contact with someone who is a confirmed positive individual. How do these new regulations apply when we send someone home and ask them to seek testing? I understand that in a scenario where they had a confirmed exposure with a close contact for someone who did, the 14-day window applies, you can't use that. But how are we interpreting this, applying this for those who did not have confirmed, but they did have what seemed to be symptoms and were further cleared through testing.
Let me address that.
Sure, and I just want to make sure. So your question is, you sent them home and they became, and they actually came back with a negative test. That's what you're asking, Phil?
Correct.
They had what appeared to be symptoms, but they got a negative test.
Yeah, that's what I think. That's what we're encountering more than anything is someone is coughing. Someone, you know, they fall within one of the criteria that fails our screening, and we send them home and require them to seek testing, only to come back and have a negative test, and they had no known exposure.
Got it.
Yes. So, one of the helpful things that these regulations provide is a series of definitions that were lacking from some of the other legislative items that were passed. And so the regulations define a COVID case as a person who, one, has tested positive for COVID-19. That becomes easy. Number two, is subject to a COVID-19 related isolation order issued by a local or state health official, or three, a person that has died from COVID-19. So first, don't let the person that's died of COVID-19 back into the workplace. We frown on that. The COVID-19 test, number one, is easy. The number two becomes a little more difficult. So bravo for you for sending the symptomatic person home. In fact, we would hope that the symptomatic person never came to work in the first place. This is where a COVID-19 negative test could be helpful, because if they test negative and they are no longer symptomatic, by definition, they're not a COVID case. However, if they were symptomatic and conferred with their doctor is probably going to say, gee, even though you've got a negative test, we would want you to stay home for 14 days, which means if they have that recommendation, I would treat that as a COVID case and they're not to return for the period of time that's outlined by OSHA. And OSHA outlines whether the return to work criterion differently for someone that's symptomatic than they do for someone that has no symptoms. Does that help you, Phil?
Yeah, it helps and also complicates. So if we're utilizing EHS, for example, which we commonly do in these scenarios, and they are subsequently advising them to seek testing and to isolate pending results, that isolation is typically, you know, my experience has been until results come back and or they meet the subsequent symptomatic free period. So it sounds like in that scenario, we would be fine once EHS gives that clearance, because there's no longer a medical provider advising them to isolate. So the critical differentiating piece would be the medical advice to self-isolate for that 14-day period. I guess my trailing question would be, from a pay, from a time coding and pay, how do we handle that for the individual that we sent home and there was no medical advice? Is that status quo as to what we've been doing for the last several months, or has that changed as an implication of this either?
Good, I get to turn my mic off for that.
So I guess I want to make clear. So, and maybe that's where I think your questions are very good questions, Phil, and they're to the point. And I want to make sure that we're not confusing the issue. These continue to be a medical determination. So that part of it, the work site, if you have the positive on the work site, Cal OSHA is saying this is what you have to do. Everybody else, we're going to do what we were doing before. If you have somebody who comes and they start to their shift and they begin to have symptoms, we're going to send them home, ask them to test, and do what we need to do in terms of wait for the determination. I think in that case, and maybe, you know, I don't, if they are released, then if they have a negative test and they're asymptomatic, they never had COVID. at that point. We're not gonna apply our own medical standard to what it is. If they're not, so if they have a negative, they're asymptomatic, there's nothing that I'm reading that requires us to make any other presumption. It's only for individuals where we know there was a confirmed positive. So in that way, I may have confused you, because I think, you know, and again, just apologizing and offering you that we are human too. We literally just got, you know, all of these regulations, and we're trying to sort through them. I'm not sure, you know, we want to be really careful about making a decision that somebody who's negative but has symptoms that we're calling them COVID from a, because sheer point of prey perspective. I don't think that's, we're following our regular methodology as it relates to that. We're only putting the Cal OSHA regulations onto individuals who we know had close contact with a positive.
No, that's helpful. You don't have to backpedal. You guys were both spot on. the one final clarification. I didn't see anything specific in this that the exposure had to occur within a workplace. So my presumption was that the exposure could have happened outside of the workplace or in the workplace.
So no. So as far as the quarantine goes, this is for a work site. So granted, the very first person may have gotten it somewhere else, right? Who is your kind of ground zero person? They come in positive. These regulations, though, only apply to those who have had then that close contact within work site, right? Now, obviously, person number one, we also need them to leave the work site. Whether or not it's work related, you know, is a completely separate question, right? It's just that we know we have a positive and we have close contact.
Perfect. Yeah, it was more of the patient zero that I was, that specific case that.
And I mean, not to, you know, but I'll just throw this out as you're all trying to flee from this and never have to hear about another word about COVID, but is that, you know, keep in mind, if you get a positive, you now have to consider the Cal OSHA regulations. You must still, within 3 business days, fill out the SB 1159 form. And for any individual who thinks they may be, that their COVID positive is work-related, we still have to give them an employee claim form for work comp within 1 business day of, if you find out they're positive and they think they got it at work, we still have to provide them the claim form. They do not have to apply for work comp benefits. That's a personal employee choice to apply or not apply, but we must give them the claim form. So now you have a positive person, you got to think Cal OSHA regulations, you have to think SB 1159, and you have to think about giving them a claim form. And then there's all the leave pay implications. And that's just one person. Are we having fun yet? I feel like you really want to return my gift and keep Ken's, and that's where it's feeling like it's not all that equitable. But anyway, so again, we're going to try to give you some cheat sheets and some ways to work your way through this, but we just need time to develop them ourselves and be able to kind of work through that. But it is coming. Okay, so if the department sends the employee home, the department may have to pay. If the doctor sends them home, it's sick time or leave, right? And I think that's a fair, yes, that's a good way of looking at it too, is if we're telling them you've got to go, now we need to look at what are the entitlements we have. But yes, once you get to the, you know, the doctor now is just, you're handling it as you would any other medical situation. If the employee has direct contact with someone who have tested positive, then the employee gets tested twice and later goes to the doctor 5 days later to get tested a third time, but the doctor recommends the employee to quarantine for 14 days. Do do we count the quarantine time from the time the doctor recommends the 14-day isolation or the first time the employee tested negative?
So the CalOSHA requirement is that employees shall be excluded from the workplace for 14 days after the last known COVID-19 exposure to a COVID case.
But I think, you know, to add to that is that that's the CalOSHA regulation. And in all of these, you have to ask the multi-tiered questions. That's the CalOSHA regulation. And so we need to make sure, okay, you know, that's one piece of it. But the second piece then becomes, what is the doctor saying? If we're not clear, we may have to seek clarification on that point. Because again, that's a medical determination. A doctor told them to do something. We don't know what the doctor is saying. Just like when we get a work restriction, they want accommodated and we don't understand it, we may need to seek clarity. So it's, you know, we have different things that are happening sort of at the same time. Because what you may not know is that now the doctor, you know, may be recommending the quarantine because the employee is telling them something about their medical status that is requiring that 14 days. You're not entitled to know that. So that's where we have to be careful about, you know, it's lots of different things all in play at the same time. All right. This was fun, wasn't it? I can tell. People are loving it. I know it's a lot, and I'm sorry that it's a lot. I promise you, we didn't write the regulations. We're just the messengers. But we will support you however we can. It continues to be our commitment. Hopefully Ken's good news today that frees you up on the PATH part. Well, you know, that's at least a plus. The minus is that, you know, this other stuff is time consuming. Again, just as a final, just if I can plead with you to go back and message in any way at all, it's exactly as Chuck said. If your staff is 6 feet apart the entire time they're at work, 6 feet or more, you don't have any close contact. So anything your agency can do to make that a reality, it alleviates all these other things. So I think that needs to be, you know, that's the one piece in all of this that sometimes feels like there's not a whole lot we can control here. That's the piece you can control. And if we can try to message that, that's where hopefully this isn't something you end up having to struggle with as we move forward. So as a final, as Chuck noted, if you want to reach out to Tony Dominguez, if you don't think you have a safety person who's attending Thursday, by all means, please, you know, let us know that part and we'll make sure people get invitations. That will be the next piece of this. And as each little part becomes more formalized and available, we'll give it to you, but definitely plan on our first Thursday DAM meeting in January, we're gonna talk all this through one more time and hopefully give you some tools that make it a little bit easier. Any final questions, comments? Doesn't look like it. Okay. All right. Well, we will, as soon as we have the pay code, which I know is obviously a big question, we'll be getting you that because you're going to need that. You know, that's a real workable piece that will be coming as soon as we're able to give it. And then the others will follow. So hang in there. We're here for you. And I promise we're going to find our way through this one way or another before it's all said and done. So we appreciate you jumping on today so impromptu, and let us know. We're here to help, but we hope you don't need us.